What's up, Gator Nation?
Good morning, Gator Nation.
You're listening to Gator Nation.
And the Gators have the biggest lead of the day.
You're listening to Morning Edition on WUMT.
From the University of Florida, College of Journalism and Communication.
3, 2, 1, we're live.
Hi, everyone. This is The Communicator, the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications podcast, where we dive into the latest in media, picking the brains of top faculty and staff around the Gator Nation. I'm Matt Abramson, Director of Media Services with Lorenzo Passavat.
Howdy.
And Nicole Scharf.
Hey, Gators.
Today, we're speaking with the award-winning Alicia Coleman, a news manager with the CJC's Innovation News Center. Thanks for joining us, Alicia.
Thank you for having me.
So what inspired you initially to study broadcast journalism and earn your bachelor's degree in mass communications from Edward Waters University?
Yeah, so back in the seventh grade.
We're going back.
Way back. In middle school, we did a wheel for electives. We were able to try all the different, electives for several weeks. And so when I got to TV production, I did like the morning announcements and just kind of little stories around the middle school and just really, really enjoyed it and was like, oh, wow, this is kind of cool. And so I just kind of stuck with it. I did TV production for the rest of middle school and then got into it in high school all 4 years and then really got into like the editing part and kind of more of the journalism as, you got older and really kind of understood that part and just was like, I really enjoy telling folks stories. So when I was looking at colleges, I knew that wherever I was going to go, I was going to study journalism. And I was looking at a lot of schools. But then my parents said, well, you're going to have to figure out how to pay for that because we don't have any money for you. And so I said, well, I got to go where I got to get a softball scholarship because I played softball my whole life. And so I ended up at Edward Waters. They came out to a few of my games and kind of went through the recruitment process. And I was like, well, do you have a journalism department? I didn't know much about the school. And they were like, well, we have mass communications, which journalism falls under that. And I said, well, that's good enough for me. I'll make it work from there. And so that's how I ended up at that university. It was college then, dating myself. And now it just became a university in the last like 2 years.
Excellent. And I didn't know we had an athlete amongst us.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a shortstop, played shortstop all the way through college. That's why my knees are terrible now.
Excellent.
Okay, so in 2010, you worked as a news reporter for KWES-TV News West 9. Yeah. How did you get that first job in the industry and what was your beat?
You know what? So that job really opened up just so much for my career in journalism. I think so much for that job. My first news director, he's now currently a mentor of mine still. But when I was in undergrad, I learned things about journalism, but I didn't learn what I should have learned. And so it took a really long time to get that job after college, about a year, when like all of my other friends were like nailing jobs really quick. And what happened was I had been applying to large markets like Market 32, Kansas City, and, Market 50, Jacksonville, and so on and so forth. And nobody was getting back to me. And so when I emailed the news director in Kansas City, she said, hey, why are you applying for this job? You don't have any experience. And she was the first and only person that ever got back to me. And she had mentioned the market size. She said, I'm Market 32. And I had no idea what that was. And so that actually really laid the foundation of why I got into teaching. I know we'll talk about that later. And so when I actually looked up market sizes, I was like, oh, I should be applying for markets 100 and higher. And so when I actually did that, News West 9 came up and I applied for that job. And I tell you, Nicole, a week later, Mark Kurtz was the news director at the time. He called me and he was like, hey, I'm interested in you coming out to Texas. And literally, I got the job like 2 weeks later and I was in Texas in like February. And so if it wasn't for that news director who just was like, girl, what are you doing? I probably would still be looking for a job today. So that's really what kind of got me out there. And it was such a blessing.
So following up on that, what was your beat? What kind of reporting did you do?
Okay, so I was in West Texas and my beat was high school football.
Ooh.
And I was like,
in Texas?
Yeah. I was like, I'm not like, I came to do news. But in West Texas, football is the news. And so my beat was Midland. Midland, Odessa. I'm sure you guys seen the movie Friday Night Lights. So, like, that movie is legit what it is about. They are not lying. And so my beat was Permian in high school. And, I mean, it was insane. It was insane. And so they sell season tickets. And the season tickets were, like, hundreds of dollars for, like, high school football. And the stadium was insane. And, like, even I remember I was, like, walking around the Odessa Mall and went into an Under Armour store, and Under Armour was Permian High School sponsor. And at the time, that was like unheard of for an athletic apparel company to sponsor a high school. It was like the real deal. And I didn't know it until we actually got into football season. And there was like a million different stories to cover. And so I had a lot of content. I just was like, I didn't come here to cover football, but I'm glad I did because I met a lot of great people, told a lot of great stories.
So from school to your first job covering high school football, what were some of the things like you learned in that first job that maybe you weren't prepared for right out the gates?
Midland is very close to Mexico, like very close, and close to New Mexico. Like, I think we were 30 minutes from this small city called Taos that was in our DMA. And so coming from just being a Florida girl born and bred and not necessarily intermingling with different nationalities, was a little bit of a challenge. News West 9 was partnered with a Telemundo station. We were housed out of the same newsroom. And so, like, my news director was always like, you have to get a Spanish interview. You have to get a Spanish interview. And I was like, I don't, like, how? I don't know. But it really helped with the Spanish language reporters and journalists there to kind of, here's how you ask the questions. And it was really nice because I actually learned Spanish. I've forgotten a little bit of it now, but when people talk Spanish to me, I can understand them.
Un poquito.
Yeah. So that was a little bit of a challenge. But I learned like a lot about different ways to tell stories for different audiences that didn't necessarily look like myself.
Next, you became a producer for WWSB TV, ABC 7 in Sarasota. How is that station and your role different?
Yeah, so I went from being on TV to, I did some producing at News West 9, but I fully produced on when I was at Suncoast News is what we called it. And so when I produced at News West 9, I really liked that part. I don't know why, I guess I just like being in charge and telling people what to do. So like the producing part really kind of spoke to me a little more. Plus I really wanted to be back in Florida. You know, like I just was like, when I got to Texas, it snowed. And I was like, oh, it snows in West Texas.
Whoa.
I was like not ready. I had flip-flops and the ice scraper. I was like, I'm not about this life. I got to get back to Florida. And so that job came up and it was a fully producing job. And so when I got there, I was on the morning show, which was the opposite of I was nightside when I was at News West 9. And so like getting in the station at like 2 a.m. was just, you know, that was an adjustment, but I was I really enjoyed producing because it was me really kind of figuring out who my audience is and then tailoring my content to make sure that audience is getting the stories and things that they need. And so it was a really great experience.
Were there any stories in Sarasota that you especially enjoyed being able to produce and feature during your time there?
Let me think. Because Sarasota is such like a, like everybody is very well off and everybody owns their own boats and everybody has these really great and fancy houses. And so like when things, not much crime happened. And so Sarasota is in the Tampa market, but it's grandfathered in. So it's not necessarily a Market 14. It's kind of like a Gainesville. But there was this one story that was really, really large and impactful. This jogger she would run on Siesta Key every morning, and one morning she was killed, and it was like pretty brutal the way that she died. And like, so those crime basically, and especially crime of that magnitude, like just doesn't happen there. And so that really like rocked the community. And so being the only station in Sarasota at the time, we were really able to kind of go to folks and really showcase, kind of help them heal, I guess, with our storytelling. It was like 8 or 9 months before they actually caught the person. because it was someone just kind of traveling through. But the amount of stories that we were able to tell and things that we were able to do with that run and with her family, you know, just kind of showcasing who she was and kind of like that running community that was on Siesta Key at the time was really impactful for those few months.
Then in 2012, you came to Gainesville working for WCJB TV20 as a news producer and MMJ. How was the Gainesville market unique or similar to the other ones you worked in?
The Gainesville market is similar to Midland in its size. And so good-sized community. You know, the Gators are here, so football is really big. But one thing that I've noticed, and even coming back, is the homeless population, the homeless issue is still prevalent. I was here reporting and producing more than a decade ago. And when I came back and I got this job and I, you know, started kind of doing my research on the big things that are happening in the city, I noticed that it's kind of the same. Like, we did a lot of reporting on the homeless issues. And while it looks different, it's still the same. That was something that, like, I was like, we really got to do more with that, you know? And so the Gainesville market isn't too different from back then to today, but it's also very similar to Midland, and that Midland and Odessa, I use them, they're right, they're side by side. So we cover both. They had their own set of small issues that seem to be still happening today. Gainesville has that similarity in the same aspect. So it's interesting to know this kind of how all these football medium towns have kind of the same things going on.
And then by 2013, you moved to the first coast of Florida as news producer for WJAX, Action News Jax. Mm-hmm. What shows did you work on there and what were your responsibilities?
Yeah, so I started there on the morning show. So we had a 4.5-hour morning show.
Ooh.
Yeah, but we had a producer for every hour, so that was nice. And so I produced the 8 o'clock hour. That was more just kind of like lighthearted and not as like hard newsy as like I've done in the past and I'm used to. So it was just like, okay, I'm going to do this, but like, this is not where I want to stay. And what, so
was the hard news like at 5 and 6?
Yeah.
And then
like, here's what's happening overnight, breaking overnight. Like, that's what I wanted to be a part of, not... Mm-hmm. You know, Cher's on her next tour and she's coming to Jacksonville. So I got, I stayed on that mornings for almost a year. And then fortunately, I got moved to Nightside, the 10 o'clock newscast, which was a lot more my speed, a lot of reporters, more fast paced, just a lot more hard news happening in that hour. And then I got, even then, I got another promotion and finished my time there, finished my career in news actually as the 11 p.m. producer, which is kind of like you're like the top dog. And I told you guys earlier, I like being the top dog. So I was the top dog of the top dogs. But my responsibilities really included it. I mean, being a producer, you're a journalist, but you have to multitask. You're managing talking with reporters, you're managing your director, you're managing your anchors, you're managing the editors, and then even kind of having to appease the news management, your Nightside EP and news director and managing editor and all the list goes on and on. And so my responsibilities really included making sure I'm collaborating with everyone, but also making sure I know my audience. And when I got to the 11, I do a lot of research with Nielsen. You know, Nielsen really is great at laying out like who your audience is, who watches, their ages, their races, so on and so forth, gender and all of that. And so I learned that at 11, a lot of Black women watch the 11 o'clock. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to tailor a lot of my content for them. And so I would do a lot of stories. I don't know if you guys remember the show Empire.
Mm-hmm.
It was like with Terrence Howard. Yeah. So that was the lead into my newscast. Oh, and so like, I was like, and so that's why I had the audience that I had.
Yeah,
that
makes
sense. Okay. So I would do, like, I would find really cool stories. Like, for instance, one of my reporters, I gave her a story one time that was about mites being in eyelashes. You know, the mm-hmm. eyelashes the ladies put on. It was my highest rated newscast, like, at the time. And it was because that was right to that audience. And so those are kind of, that's a, you know, the list of responsibilities is exhaustive, but that's some of the things that I did.
And now we're thinking about the mites in our eyelashes.
Not real eyelashes.
So I know that you won an Edward R. Murrow for News Excellence.
We won the Murrow. I was part of the team that won the Murrow for overall news excellence after our coverage of Hurricane Matthew back in 2016, I think.
That's a terrifying hurricane name, by the way.
It is. Yeah. So we were you know, like a news station, we locked down and we were in there for 38 hours on air covering this hurricane. It was initially supposed to hit Jacksonville, but then it hit further south, like closer to Daytona. But St. Augustine got really, really bad. And so so we got the Murrow for that just because we did a lot of like community work leading up to the storm because it was supposed to hit us. And then after, we spent a lot of time in St. Augustine. Volano Beach was just like destroyed really bad. And I think literally one of the last houses on stilts, they're about to knock it down. And that the storm hit in 2016, it's 2024. So that's crazy.
So across the stations you've worked, what were some of the biggest challenges you faced? You mentioned obviously the different markets and managing the staffs, but I mean, are there other challenges that you had to overcome?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think a lot of the challenges came in my last job there because I was at Action for almost 5 years, a little more than 5 years, and really trying to, just like in Texas, you know, News West 9 wanted to make sure that they were contributing to their Spanish language audience. I wanted to make sure that our Black audience, the audience members that look like me, were seen and heard, you know, because we were doing a lot of newscasts that, you know, sound bites and interviews and things like that were happening. It wasn't a diverse group of people. And so when we would get into like editorial meetings, I would, you know, push a lot for particular stories. You know, we had our own Trayvon Martin type of shooting that happened in Jacksonville. Jordan Davis, he was shot listening to music at a gas station. And so one story that like I really, really fought hard for with my news management was his father wanted to go back to the gas station and had got it all approved. It was, the story was happening, and wanted to do a tribute to Jordan by everybody just blaring their radios loud at the time that he was shot and killed. News managers at the time were like, well, you know, that's really not something that we were covering. I'm like, this is a really great news story. And this is a story that is important to the Black community. You know, and it's something that we need to be focused on. We need to be doing news stories that impact Black members. You know, I fought hard for that story. My alma mater is in Jacksonville, right? It's across the bridge. It's on the Black side of town. But it's the first historically Black college in the state and one of the first to be founded after the slaves were emancipated. Why are we not doing more stories about that? That's really important. And so I found that I was really having to fight and fight and fight and fight to tell those types of stories. And I'm happy now because Edward Waters, which we call EDUB, is now a university, just got the largest amount of funding from the state that it's ever gotten, $12 million. It was in Governor DeSantis's budget. And so now those stations in Jacksonville have no choice because so many big things are happening. But I credit to myself and, you know, some of my other African-American colleagues at the time for really pushing to make sure that we're telling those types of stories.
Was it the inertia and the lack of historically telling those stories that was being fought against? Was it just bias from the operators in the station? You know, what were the challenge, like behind those challenges, do you think?
I think it was just a lack of understanding.
Yeah.
I think it was just a lack of not knowing how important certain things are to certain groups of people, and then not willing to understand that they are. Sometimes they almost came to blows. And I'm like, what are you doing? I understand that you're news management, but like we're technically in the trenches every day. I do my homework on the type of audience that we service.
Yeah, you've got the data of the Nielsen data saying this is what they're reacting to.
Right.
So we want to show them.
Right. Every day. Mm-hmm. We get it every day. Like, you can't just pay attention to the numbers during sweeps. That's not going to be good enough. And so if I'm telling you that these this is our audience. I'm not saying completely, excuse me, go to, you know, we're just going to cover all African-American news all the time. Like, you know, but we have a responsibility to cater to all of our audience. So, and what's interesting is when I got to Action, it wasn't, it was like a more of an independent owned company. And then Cox Media Group took it over. And I don't know if you guys know about the Cox brand, but they are very specific in how many blondes they want on air, how many men, how many women of a particular race, and, you know, so on and so forth. Like, even there, we had to abide by their metrics, right? So, like, if you got a white man in the soundbite in one package, the next package better have a black woman or a black man. Everything was had to even out because they had to showcase who our audience was. And even the talent, something I talk to my students about all the time when they're looking for jobs. So Cox has black female anchor, white male anchor. In your newscast, in a 5 o'clock newscast, there needs to be a white female anchor with blonde, or white female reporter with blonde hair, and there needs to be a black reporter, and then there needs to be a black man, and so on and so forth. Because they're very specific on, we want to make sure all faces are seen, because that's who our audience is made up of.
So while you were at Action News Jax, you did what a lot of professionals do. You went and earned your master's degree, in this case, broadcast journalism from Full Sail University. Salutatorian, congratulations on that. Whew. What led you to go back to higher ed to get that degree?
Yeah, so while I was at Action, I did a lot of mentoring at EW. I would go back, I would talk to the students, I would have them come to the station, do internships. Like, I just was really trying to give back to my school that had gave me so much. And the chair at the time, Dr. Davis, she allowed me to adjunct a course. And I was like, I was so nervous. But then I did it and I got through the semester and it was great. And the students like loved me and all that. I was like, you know what? I could do this for real. And so I was like, I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to go back. I'm going to get my master's and I'm going to see if I can teach. At the time, I was thinking maybe I could just adjunct while continuing my news career, because I did have aspirations of becoming a news director one day. But I don't know where it changed, because that the year that I was in school, because I did a 12-month program, it was actually out of the master's program here or Full Sail. But I ultimately chose Full Sail because it was 12 months over 18 months. But it was a lot. And I was working my butt off, because we were going through a lot of change. A lot of people were leaving. So I was working like 60 hours a week, doing a 6 and 11, trying to get all my work done by noon, because I wasn't going to be there, and get it done by 11:59. And so when it was a really challenging year. And then we had a really bad story where a 2-year-old was shot and killed sitting in his car seat. And so I just was like, you know, they say in journalism, you're not supposed to take the story home with you. Definitely took that story home. And it literally still impacts me to this day. And I was like, you know what? This might be a little too heavy for me now. You know, I think I still love my journalism, but I don't know if it's best for me to continue to be in a newsroom telling stories like this. And so that's kind of what ultimately shifted me completely out of news and more into academia.
I'm Glenn Richards from WUFT Amplified. If you're like me, you appreciate how special the local music scene is here in North Central Florida, featuring indie rock, hip-hop, bluegrass, and so much more. WUFT Amplified is Florida's music series, filmed right here in Weimer Hall. This show rocks, guys, seriously. And you might not realize that WUFT Amplified is produced entirely by UFCJC staff and students. To watch past episodes and discover your new favorite bands, check out WUFT.org/amplified.
And so, starting your journey in academia, what were some of the first classes you taught, or where were you teaching kind of after you got your master's degree?
Yeah, so my first teaching job was at South Carolina State University. It's a historically black college in Orangeburg, small town of Orangeburg. And I would say, so, you know, in news, we're used to, especially broadcast, we're used to just getting the story, right? Right. And so that's kind of how I taught. Like, my lectures would literally last like 15 minutes. But I needed to say, and my chair, they were like, well, you have to like engage more in the students. And I'm like, well, they said they got the material. So why do we need to be here all day? I don't understand why we have to be here for 75 minutes.
You're efficient.
Right. So I really had to learn how to expand upon what I was teaching, and not just necessarily stand in front of the classroom and talk at students, but like, you know, what we do here is very practical, right? There's nothing that, I mean, you'll get stuff out of a PowerPoint lecture, but we got to get our hands on some equipment and some gear and like start doing some work. And so after my first semester, I really kind of took more ownership of like, how can I get them out and doing work? And so that really kind of shifted how I teach, how I taught moving forward. And so I spent 2 years at SC State and then got the opportunity to come a little closer to home and taught at Valdosta State University, which is a wonderful university. I love that school. Love that town. It really reminded me of Midland because it's football, football, football. So I felt like I was right at home with the students, and spent some time there. I spent 2 years there as well, but then I met my husband who lived in Jacksonville. I was like, well, you know, Jacksonville's always been a second home. So I was like, oh, yeah, I can come on back. And ended up teaching at Bethune-Cookman. Ended up getting pregnant and having my first little guy. And then, you know, my husband and I were just like, well, you know, Jacksonville is, I'm from Ocala, so just right south of here. And my family is all there. And so I was like, well, let's just get closer to home, right? So like, I was like, we have a baby now. Like, let's go where our village is. And so this opportunity at UF popped up and I was like, this is really unique. And this is something that I think that I would be really great at, you know, both working in the newsroom and in the classroom. Like, it just feeds both of my loves, you know, so it's perfect. And so I was able to get this opportunity and we moved to Ocala. And so we're just here and we're just trying to do the best we can do.
This is Nicole again. As you just mentioned, in 2023, you joined the CJC as a news manager. How have you been able to contribute to the WUFT news products?
Yeah, so I think that when I got here, the producing component of the news product was lacking. I really kind of overhauled that because producing, while it's great, whatever job you want to do in this industry is wonderful. But everybody doesn't need to be on TV. And there are a plethora of other ways that you can service your community without being what we call a face, right? And producing is one of those ways. And so when I got here, I felt like the producers need an overhaul. And so I really brought to them the core that was there. I just kind of showed them, like, here's the things that you can do to be great, right? And if you want to get far in your career in this industry, producing may be the way to do that. Producing is likely the way to do that. I know that you can get to news management as a talent. You can. It's a long road. Producing is what these news stations want right now. They want producers. They want people who can write. They want people who can put quality newscasts together right now. And so they're going to get you in. They're going to give you the tools that you need to succeed. And then you're going to climb up that ladder fairly quickly in your career. I just made producing just as important as being on TV. And I really think that that resonated with a lot of students because in the spring, our producers picked up. And I'm happy to say this fall, I heard, for I teach producing one in advanced producing, we have more producers in that course than we've had in previous. That is where I'm making the most impact. And as far as producers, you have your hands in everything that happens in the newscast. You are in control of the content that the audience sees, right? Editorially speaking, right? We're not just throwing anything in there, but you are making important stories of the day that people at home need to know.
And you kind of touched on this previously, your teaching style had a great time. I really enjoy your style. I know a lot of other students do as well. So what kind of courses do you instruct here at UF? And kind of just like explain like how you navigate those and that style of teaching.
Yeah, so I teach broadcast writing boot camp. So for it's just a one credit course and kind of laying out how we should be writing when it comes to television and radio, writing for the eye and the ear, proper Associated Press style guidelines, how to write a voiceover, how to write a VOSA, how to write a package, those types of things. It's a very, it's a foundational course to set folks up to go to, you know, Television One or producing or so on and so forth. And like I said, I just mentioned, I teach a producing one in an advanced producing course. And so my teaching philosophy is really based on my personal experience, my journey through my professional career in news. I love my alma mater to death. Love that school. But I do feel like I was not fully prepared to be in news. So like I gave you the example earlier about the DMAs, right? And so then even when I got to News West 9 and some of the stories that, you know, because you can't, while Permian was my beat, you know, football season is football season. So you got to tell other stories until, you know, you have that opportunity. So in telling those other stories, really learning the importance of writing properly, right? And knowing that, like, you're always going to be working on your writing. Like, I've been writing for 20 years, but I know that I can be better, you know? And so just using my personal experiences and the experiences of like some of my colleagues, right? So that I don't think is talked about enough is like contracts, right? Contract negotiations for students. Students coming out of college, I can't ask for $5,000 more in my salary. Yes, you can. Yes, you absolutely can.
Or length of a non-compete.
Right. You can ask for any of the clauses that you want. You know, I tell my Black students and my Hispanic students, tell them, you know, you want them to pay for your NAHJ or NABJ dues. And you want to go to the conference because that is professional development. You can ask for those things and these people will pay, right? They will pay for those things. You just have to ask. Don't just take what folks give you. And so I learned that because in my first TV job, while very happy for News West 9, they offered me $18,000 a year. And on the weekends, I had to bartend at Outback Steakhouse. And people were like, didn't I just see you on TV last night? I'm like, yeah. About all that, right? But had I known that these companies have about $10,000 salary, but no one taught me that in school. So I really use a lot of my personal experiences as my teaching, as a basis for my teaching philosophy. Because I want them to know it's just not all fun and games. You know, I was up for a job in Daytona at Daytona. And I went in there during the interview. It was during a newscast. And I was like, who does their makeup? And they're like, yeah, we get the people from the cosmetology department to do their makeup. And I said, well, how is that going to prepare them for their first markets where you got to do your own hair and makeup? And in large markets where you're doing your own hair and makeup, that is not realistic. And you're setting them up for something that they're not going to get when they get out in the real world. So, you know, I just really use kind of where I came from and my journey as a basis for my teaching philosophy.
How can CJC students get involved and gain more experience in broadcast news production here?
Yeah, so there's so many ways. You know, we have an entire production team. And what's great is, like, I teach our producers to create very difficult newscasts for our production team. So that's one way. Being a part of the production team and being a part of the production team opens you up to see the newscast, right? So the newscast, I always say, is a car, right? Everybody, you know, the production team is the engine. And it's great because it's literally working. I have one student, Sam, our editor, he came as an editor and he just signed up for my producing course in the fall because he's been seeing how producers have been putting the show together, and it's something that really interests him. So production, producing, weather, web, you know, digital, radio, and then you're on camera, your talent, your anchoring, reporting. There are just so many ways. Just go into the INC. That's what I've been telling you. You heard me in boot camp. Walk in the INC, walk in my office and tell me you're interested and I will find a spot. We will find a spot for you.
Firsthand experience working as a student in the INC in a couple of different areas, like every corner, every desk, every seat, there is something going on, something different going on. And it's just, it's a really great place. It's very inspirational. It's just very interesting because there's just so many different areas that you wouldn't even imagine.
Yeah, it's a very beautiful and unique.
You have experience reporting in the Gainesville market yourself once upon a time. So do you have any cliff notes for the students who are either covering the city now for in the market?
There is an economical shift in this city that wasn't happening 12 years ago, 14. Yeah, 12 years ago. And I think telling those stories is important because folks are bored to live here. And I know that those types of things are happening all across the country, but here it is very. And I think that there are a lot of stories of a lot of people that can be told that I don't think we're doing a good enough service to our community when it comes to just kind of that aspect of it.
Absolutely. So more broadly now, why do you think journalism and news media is important today, especially?
Oh, to battle disinformation.
Is that a thing? I'm just kidding.
It is a thing. It is a thing. It is rampant, right? And for every credible story with integrity that is unbiased, that is told, there is 30 that are not. And so, you know, and journalists are, you know, I hate to say it, but journalists are in danger, right? They're just in danger doing their job. And I'm in this group on Facebook of current and former journalists. And then I have my own kind of groups of like my friends who were colleagues at the time. And we talk all the time about watching each other's backs. You know what I mean? Especially after the events that happened Saturday, right? So you're already going to these kind of high tension places to cover your stories. And then, you know, unfortunate things happen. And the consensus is it doesn't matter that you're the competition across the street. Like, you guys got to watch each other's backs because nobody else is going to do that for you. And so now you're just adding another layer, another safety layer to what you already have to do as a journalist. You already have to, you know, make sure that you're telling a fair and balanced story. And so now you have to do that in a way to where I've got to make sure that I'm safe. I mean, you do that anyway, but today, in today's climate, it's heightened. And so, you know, disinformation just, it has to be continued to be battled. They base a brand new job, fact checking. That is a job that I tell my students about. Listen, you don't have to be on TV. You can be a fact checker. And they make money, like lots of money, just to go through and say, nope, that's wrong. This happened, blah, 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 blah. Nope, that's wrong. He said this. And so there's so much disinformation out there, but journalists have to persevere and keep going and keep like fighting it and just not letting it happen.
You've already given us a ton of advice in this interview, but do you have any additional advice for students wanting to break into the field of journalism?
Leave your comfort zone. At the university I've worked at. And the consensus of all the students is, now I'm going to go back home to Miami or whatever and make all my dreams come true. No, you're 20, you're 21. Go to West Virginia or Minot, North Dakota and sign a 2-year contract and get your experience. And then you can control where you want to go and the types of news stations you want to be at from there. Home is always going to be there. I told you guys I'm from Ocala and I graduated high school in 2004 and I've only been back home to visit. And then my family and I just moved back to Ocala this year and it looks a little different, but Ocala is still Ocala. Home is not going anywhere. Go get out of your comfort zone. go be great and come back. I love News West 9. That was the best job I ever had. Legit. Friends to this day, brothers and sisters. We've gone to baby showers and weddings and everything. And it's wonderful. But you can always come back home. So just go get out of your comfort zone and go be great.
That's great advice. It seems like in your comfort zone, you can't do it quite as much growing and learning. Right. So yeah, put yourself in uncomfortable positions and you'll grow quickly.
Exactly. And you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
When you get out, you got to take a chance.
You might learn something you didn't even know existed was a new path.
And you might love where you're at and say, oh, this is where I'm going to be.
Mm-hmm. Or you'll go, yeah, Ocala was the right place.
Exactly. Exactly. But you're never going to know unless you go.
Exactly.
I think the other side of that also, as a student that's getting ready to kind of like go into the job market and like apply different areas, is to kind of trust the process. And mm-hmm. if certain places say no, and just, you know, keep on working towards it, because it doesn't matter if you end up in like kind of like a random little city that's like super far. It's like you will end up where you're supposed to.
You are. Yeah. And you only need that one job. You only need those couple of years to just kind of get your feet wet, to really just determine. Like, so many students have gone and gotten their first job, and then they've gotten an agent, and now they're, you know, in New York or somewhere, Chicago. But it's all because that Minot, North Dakota, that Midland, Odessa job.
Well, Alicia, thank you for joining us. We appreciate talking and learning about the new. So appreciate your time.
I was happy to do this. This is great. Let's do it again.
The Communicator Podcast is a production of UF's College of Journalism and Communications. This episode was produced by Nicole Sharp. Thanks to our guest, Alicia Coleman, hosted by Matt Abramson and featuring Lorenzo Passava and Nicole Sharp. Special thanks to WUFT. Go Gators!